Hello and welcome to the Cultural Property Law Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Dietz. I want to start off by apologizing for taking so long to post a new podcast. I had some problems with the recording program that I'm using. So anyway, because I didn't want to keep you waiting even longer, I've made this episode into a two-parter. So here's part one on Napoleon looting and the Louvre. Systematic state-sanctioned looting of cultural property began in earnest during the French Revolution and the subsequent wars that engulfed Europe for the next quarter century. As part of their wide-ranging and multifaceted efforts to improve the lives of every French citizen, the revolutionary government envisioned the creation of a grand museum, bringing the wonders of the world directly to the people. The confiscation of the wealth of the French aristocracy and the Catholic Church, followed by the spectacular victories of French arms, would endow France's new national museum, the Louvre, with the greatest collection of art the world had ever known. The building chosen to house the new museum had itself been one of Louis XVI's palaces. On August 10, 1793, 7 months after the king's execution, the Louvre opened its doors to the public with an exhibition of more than 500 paintings confiscated from the royal collection and Parisian churches. The churches were targeted as the revolutionaries sought to weaken the power and influence of the Catholic Church and clergy in France. Subsequently, as more and more French nobles fled the country or faced the national razor, more commonly known as the guillotine, their art collections were also added to the Louvre. As French armies brought the revolution to other countries in Europe, they began to bring those countries' treasures back to France. Beginning in 1794, French armies were accompanied by artists and other specialists who would select the works of art from defeated nations to be sent to France and the Louvre. The rise of Napoleon saw an expansion of the looting campaign and a corresponding increase in the number of works of art shipped to the Louvre, now modestly renamed the Musée Napoléon. However, it should be noted that the looting program had already been established and was well underway before he came to power. On October 16, 1794, a full 2 years before Napoleon was given command of an army, the Commission Temporaire des Arts appointed a subcommittee of 4 members to compile full information on works of art and science to be found in countries which the armies of France expected to invade. Only 2 weeks later, the committee produced a catalog of works of art in both public and private collections in Holland and the Rhineland. In early 1795, the committee presented another catalog, this time listing works of art that still remained in Belgium after the French looting of 1794. Those looted works from Belgium had been the first to be sent to France. Not only did the public greatly appreciate all the artwork sent back to France, but the artists of France supported it as well. In fact, they even recommended it. In October 1796, in the midst of Napoleon's looting in Italy, a petition was sent to the Directory signed by many of the leading artists of France, which stated, "The more our climate seems unfavorable to the arts, the more do we require models here in order to overcome the obstacles to the progress thereof. The Romans, once an uncultivated people, became civilized by transplanting to Rome the works of conquered Greece. Thus, the French people, naturally endowed with exquisite sensitivity, will, by seeing the models from antiquity, train its feeling and its critical sense. The French Republic, by its strength and superiority of its enlightenment and its artists, is the only country in the world which can give a safe home to these masterpieces. All other nations must come to borrow from our art." It's noteworthy that the artist described France as the only place where the works would be safe, because until only recently, this was the primary justification used by industrialized nations for their retention of cultural property taken from poorer nations. The French also justified their taking of the works by contending that the other countries frankly didn't deserve to have them because of their religious views or political systems. In 1799, a French general wrote in glowing terms of "the statues which the French have taken from the degenerate Roman Catholics to adorn the museums of Paris and to distinguish by the most noble of trophies the triumph of liberty over tyranny and philosophy over superstition." He continued, Real conquests are those made on behalf of the arts, the sciences, and taste. Similarly, in a speech to the convention in 1796, a cavalry lieutenant who had escorted one of the first shipments of art from Belgium noted with pride that these immortal works are no longer on foreign soil. They are brought to the homeland of arts and genius, to the homeland of liberty and sacred equality, the French Republic. The arrival of these works on August 31, 1794, was announced by Henri Gregoire, a prominent Catholic priest and member of the convention. In this speech, Gregoire demonstrated that France had already set her sights on artwork in other countries, particularly Italy. He stated, "If our victorious armies penetrate into Italy, the removal of the Apollo Belvedere and of the Farnese Hercules would be the most brilliant conquest." Interestingly, although Gregoire approved of French armies bringing artwork from conquered countries back to France, he was an outspoken critic of the looting and destruction of cultural property that was occurring within France during the Revolution, even presenting a report on the issue to the convention, in which he coined the term vandalism to describe it. The man who would lead French forces into Italy and take possession of the works Gregoire had dreamed of was none other than Napoleon Bonaparte himself. On April 28, 1796, less than 2 months after Napoleon took command of the Army of Italy, he makes his first mention of appropriating Italian artwork. In a letter to a friend, he discussed a treaty he had recently concluded with the King of Sardinia, and stated that he regretted not demanding a certain painting from the king as part of the treaty terms. He would not repeat this mistake again, and throughout 1796 and 1797, Napoleon required nearly every city he conquered to surrender works of art. On May 1st, he wrote to a French minister in Genoa, requesting a list of the, quote, pictures, statues, and other collections to be found at Milan, Parma, Piacenza, Modena, and Bologna. A few days later, he sent a similar letter to the Directory, and also asked them to send him 3 or 4 artists. On May 9th, Napoleon signed a new armistice, this time with the Duke of Parma, which included a clause requiring the Duke to surrender 20 paintings of Napoleon's choosing. In his memoirs, Napoleon was clearly proud of this clause, writing that the stipulation of works of art for the benefit of the Louvre was an act unprecedented in modern history. And he was correct. For while victorious nations frequently took cultural works from their defeated adversaries, never before had the surrender of such works been explicitly included as part of the terms of a treaty. As Napoleon continued through Italy, he demanded 20 paintings from Parma, which he would choose personally, and later demanded 27 more. From Modena, he demanded another 20, and subsequently an additional 29. From Venice, 20 paintings and 600 manuscripts. And from Rome, 500 manuscripts and 100 paintings, busts, vases, or statues, with specific reference made to a bronze bust of Junius Brutus and a marble bust of Marcus Brutus. Napoleon also took an unknown number of works from Milan, Bologna, and Cento. The number of works French forces took from any given city could vary greatly for several reasons. Certain cities were considered not to have much worth taking. Mantua, for example, was only required to surrender 4 paintings, while the treatment of others often depended on the character of the particular French official assigned to the task. Punitive confiscations could also occur. In April 1797, for example, works of art were taken from Verona following a brief revolt, and in 1798, additional confiscations were ordered in Rome after a leading French general was assassinated. The first works of art from Italy arrived in Paris on July 27th and 28th, 1798, as part of a triumphal procession modeled after those of ancient Rome. The treasures included the Apollo Belvedere, which had been mentioned as far back as 1794 as an item which should be appropriated by the French, a total of about 65 sculptures from the Vatican and Capitoline museums, 9 paintings by Raphael, 2 by Correggio, as well as natural history and mineral collections, and manuscripts from the Vatican dating over 1,000 years old. And as a nod to the Roman tradition of parading the wild beasts of conquered lands, the French procession also included dozens of captured zoo animals. And on that triumphal note, I'm going to stop part one of Napoleon Looting and the Louvre. In part two, I'll discuss the efforts of the Allied powers to recover their looted works after Napoleon was finally defeated in 1815, and the French reaction to this turn of events. My sources for this episode were the article Heritage Preservation as a Public Duty by Joseph Sachs in the Michigan Law Review, The Concept of Cultural Protection in Times of Armed Conflict by Patrick Boylan, and Law, Ethics, and the Visual Arts by Merriman and Elson. I hope you'll tune in to the next episode of the Cultural Property Law Podcast. This is Nick Dietz signing off.